Today's opening tip: in his first game back since his wife gave birth to twins, Damian Lillard dropped 39 points, 8 assists on the Knicks. Vince, isn't he supposed to be tired or something? 3 kids now.
Hey, maybe they gave him life. Extra, he powered up.
Brian, you've got one.
Just wait till he goes on the road and gets some sleep.
Right? Well, that's true.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, I'm sure he can't wait.
Very sweet by Dame. He said that having children has given him perspective, allowed him to understand that if he has a bad game, that's all it is. So he said he started playing better after Dame Jr. was born 3 years ago. The league better watch out if he's going to play 3 times as well. Just saying. Welcome to the jump, everyone. Bum, bum, bum. I'm Rachel Nichols. I'm joined by our esteemed panel today. First, we have the host of the Hoop Collective podcast, New York Times bestseller, Brian Windhorst. We also have 8-time All-Star and the only person to ever play 22 seasons in the NBA, future Hall of Famer, Vince Carter. Welcome, gentlemen. Coming up, guys, we're going to talk a little bit about Steph Curry. He passed Reggie Miller for second on the all-time threes made list this past weekend. When will Steph pass Ray Allen? Stick around for that. First, though, winning streaks are a funny thing. Sometimes they can bring a team together. Remember back in 2010 when LeBron first got to Miami and the start of the season was kind of a mess with the big three struggling to fit and Eric Spoelstra facing daily questions about whether he'd be fired? The team held a players-only meeting, reeled off a 12-game win streak, and became the powerhouse that would go on to win 2 titles in 4 years. But winning streaks can also end up meaning not much. Last year's Bucks won 18 straight, only to get thumped in the second round of the playoffs. Back in 08, the Rockets won 22 in a row, then lost in the first round. So how should we look at the Clippers and Jazz right now? LA is on a 7-game win streak, a run fueled by Paul George playing some of the best basketball of his career, and by Kawhi Leonard, who has not only shown up for the Clippers, but is doing it consistently. This current Clipper streak includes Kawhi's first back-to-back games in nearly 4 years. Kawhi has also done what big stars are supposed to do, like yesterday, when much of the team appeared it hadn't quite woken up yet for the early Sunday afternoon tip. Leonard took things into his own enormous hands, outscoring the entire Thunder starting lineup in the first quarter and finishing with 34-9-8. To me, everything the Clippers do this regular season is important, since last year we saw what happened when the team tried to skip steps. This time, they're giving themselves a much stronger foundation, but will the result be any different? Yeah, we don't know yet. As for the Jazz, well, they're on an 8-game winning streak right now, one of the league's top 5, both offensively and defensively. Nearly all their wins so far this season have come by double digits. And Donovan Mitchell has clearly hit the gas pedal during this streak, putting up 27 a game. So what does Utah's streak mean? According to Steve Kerr, a lot. This weekend, the Warriors coach said of Utah, quote, "They are trying to win a championship right now, and I think they are capable of doing so. You know, they are where we were 3 or 4 years ago," which is, well, quite the comparison. 3 or 4 years ago, Golden State had Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green all playing at the height of their powers on a team that was itself drawing comparisons to the 98 Bulls. I'm not sure that I think Utah's winning streak already puts them in that category. And it's important to remember that just last season, the Jazz had a 10-game win streak and still lost in the first round. Still, both the Jazz and the Clippers' runs, they sure feel like something significant, and neither is over yet. So, Vince, let's start with you. Who do you feel is the second-best team in the West right now, giving some deference to the defending champion Lakers? Do you feel the Clippers slot in as their biggest rival in the West, or the Jazz, given what you've seen this past week or two?
I mean, the Jazz are playing great basketball, and like you said, they're on a mission. But I still think the Clippers are hungry, and they're also on a mission. They're trying to get to that Western Conference Finals again because they felt like, oh, not again, but to get where they should have been last year because they felt like they let opportunity slip away. So I think they're hungry, and they're playing great basketball as well. So I still give the edge to the Clippers, even though you asked me this in maybe 2 weeks. It could be the Utah Jazz if they continue to play like they're playing.
Yeah, I think the Clippers have a higher ceiling because they have guys on their roster Kawhi, who's been a Finals MVP a couple of times. But the one thing about these two teams that you have to pay attention to, It's 2021, three-point shooting. The Clippers are number one in the league in three-point shooting percentage. The Jazz are number two. The Jazz are number one in overall three-pointers made per game. That's what Steve Kerr is talking about, Rachel. He's talking about it reminds him of a team that plays good defensively and also overwhelms the opponent with high-volume three-point shooting. Now, the Clippers' defense at the start of this win streak was ranked in the bottom five in the league. They've played better, and now they've crawled into the top 15. So the Jazz are playing more consistently on defense, and that's something that matters. Look, mid-February, I think it's February 12th and 13th, somewhere around Valentine's Day, the Jazz go to L.A. and play a little two-pack of games against the Clippers and Lakers. That will be a good referendum, something to look forward to.
Very, very interesting. Look, they're fun teams to watch right now, and it's pretty fun watching Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert and Jordan Clarkson and everybody on that squad. Really, you can see them learning what they are right now, and that's really fun as well to watch a team figuring out just how much firepower it has. Now, guys, I want to move on to the eastern side of the bracket here. Let's move on to Jaylen Brown, who had a historic performance last night. He dropped 33 points in just 19 minutes. And according to Elias Sports, that's the most point by any player in fewer than 20 minutes in the shot clock era. That dates, guys, back to 1955. When you have done something no one has done since 1955, it is a big deal.
That's crazy.
And it gets the attention of 11-time champ Bill Russell, who tweeted at Jaylen, "Great playing tonight. Keep it up." So, Brian, is Jaylen Brown on your most improved player ballot already?
He's on my most improved player ballot. He's on the All-Star ballot. He's on the All-NBA ballot. I got to be honest with you. There's only three or four players in this league right now I would probably trade Jaylen Brown for. And the contract that he signed, while it is a $100 million contract, is well less than the max, making the Celtics thrilled that they got him on that deal. He's arguably one of the most valued dollar-for-dollar players in the league right now. And if you watch the way he got the points in this game, he showed everything. He created turnovers and scored in transition. He took the ball to the basket. He came off of screens on catch and shoots and shot it. He did pull-ups. It was a complete display of how well-rounded his game was going to be. A couple of years ago, when he was in his second year, I kind of thought he was going to be a sort of a 3-and-D player, hard-nosed defender who would score when the ball came to him. He wasn't getting the ball much. Now you look at him and say he's a foundational piece of a championship contender.
I agree. I definitely think he's tops for most improved. And you could see at the end of last year, the way he was playing and the confidence that he was playing with, that let you know going through the summer and, well, whenever, I guess it wasn't a summer, but going into next year, he was going to play with a lot of confidence. And he hit the season, he hit the ground running from the beginning of the season. So, I mean, I think they're 1A and 1B when you're talking about the best players and most important players on the Celtics team. And when he goes and when Tatum goes, their team goes. And then you add Kemba Walker. So, I think right now, most improved, like you said, an all-star, he's playing right at all-star level that he's playing at right now. And look out for Jaylen Brown, because the Celtics have a great opportunity to come out of the East because they play on both ends extremely hard.
Vince, what did you notice about playing against Jaylen Brown when you went against him over the past few years?
He could do everything. Very athletic. He's a guy at 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", in that area who can guard 1 through 4. And he's very confident in his game. And you can see his jump shooting and his three-point shooting and his confidence putting the ball on the floor just start to soar in every year. And now watching him from afar, thinking back to seeing him his rookie year, like Brian said, you didn't know at first. And you're like, oh, yeah, he's a pretty good player. And now he's becoming a special player. And he will be getting a max soon.
See, this is one of the awesome things about having Vince Carter in the show, like number 207. He's his own basketball reference. He has been able to play against and judge every player in the NBA over the last two decades and can give you their progression right off the bat. So, Vince, we appreciate that. We're going to have a lot more of Vince Carter coming up, as well as me and Brian. He's going to give us his top three dunkers in the game today in this next segment. You are going to want to stick around for that. First, though, here's a distant replay. This date in 2020, when LeBron passed Kobe on the all-time scoring list, the jump was in Philadelphia for this game, and it was a moment.
He just became the third leading scorer in NBA history, passing Kobe Bryant.
I'm not even going to talk about what happened the next day. I'm going to savor this.
All that's left ahead of him is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Karl Malone. Everybody in the building giving LeBron James a standing ovation.
Time to write it back, guys. Vince Carter's top three current pound-for-pound dunkers in the league. Number three, you picked Aaron Gordon of the Magic, Vince. You think he got robbed last season in the dunk contest?
I did. I mean, he should have a trophy, and that's why he's three instead of two to me because of that. I know him very well. We've had a lot of conversations about dunking, about doing the dunk contest, what to do. So he deserves one.
All right.
For
speaking
sure.
of dunk contest, airplane mode, Derrick Jones Jr. Now of the Trailblazers.
And he's earned airplane mode for a reason. This guy can fly. He's fearless. He's not afraid to jump or dunk over anybody. I think soon, at some point, you'll see him. Look at that right there. Oh, my goodness.
Woo. And number one.
Airplane mode.
A two-time dunk champ on his own, Zach LaVine of the Bulls. What do you got, Vince?
I mean, you said it. Two-time champ. I've seen him dunk on a few people live playing in Atlanta. And not only now, he's not just a dunker anymore. And we talked about that. I was like, hey, show the world what you could do, but don't just be labeled as a dunker. And what he's doing this year, he could be in the running for most improved as well.
I totally agree with that. And Brian, he was trying to win the three-point contest also, so he could have both, right?
He could do that
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, Zach LaVine's had an incredible rise in his career in the last couple years. Hats off to him, and he's got the Bulls. A team you want to watch is the Bulls right now.
All right, guys. Another team you want to watch is always the Warriors. As long as Steph Curry is on that team, he is climbing up the career threes list. How soon until he's number one, and how similar or different is he than his predecessors? Again, we have Basketballopedia Vince Carter on the show, who can tell you exactly what it's like to play against Reggie Miller, Ray Allen, and Steph Curry. We'll discuss next.
I'm playing against all three.
And welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, still hanging out with Mr. Vince Carter, Brian Windhorst, and as we mentioned, guys, Steph Curry passing Reggie second on the all-time three-points list this past weekend. Steph throwing up the number 31 to pay homage to Reggie when he tied the record. Curry now trails only Ray Allen for the most threes made ever. Curry eclipsed Reggie's mark now in his 715th game, while Miller took almost 1,400 games to get there. But he did get to do something fun with Steph Curry on the media Zoom press conference after the game. Take a listen.
Number one, congratulations. This is an unbelievable achievement, but the work is not done. Obviously, I know you're chasing Ray, but you are an inspiration to so many little ones like mine. And I'm just so proud of all the work because I know what goes into that. I know the countless hours when it's easy to, you know, go hang with your boys, hit the club, sleep, do other things, but you're in the lab getting your work done. So the sacrifices, obviously, with your family, you're an unbelievable father and family man. And I know there's sacrifices that come with that. And the blend that you have with your family and basketball and Dub Nation, the Millers are very proud of you, especially this little guy. He is your number one fan. So thank you so much for what you have done, my friend.
That means a lot, Reg. I appreciate it. Like you said, I know I have a lot more in the tank, but to try to live out all those, that competitive juice, the work that goes in, the appreciation of every game I get to play, and to shoot the ball at this level, obviously doing a lot of other things, but to follow your footsteps in that regard, it means a lot. So I appreciate the support. You and Ray have been, if I'm chasing any record, to have two guys that have reached back and encouraged me the way that y'all have, it means a lot. So I'll pass that torch on as well, but I appreciate you, man. And thanks for all the support.
Steph is right. Very classy move from Reggie Miller there. Now look at pacing here. At Curry's current pace of just over 4 made threes per game, he could surpass Allen's record toward the end of next season if he remains healthy. Whenever Curry does get there, virtually every record relating to three-point shooting will belong to Steph. Now, Vince, we've all kind of known around the league that's going to be the direction this is going, but you're the one who has faced Steph Curry, Reggie Miller, and Ray Allen all in their primes. The whole thing was your prime, just saying. What stands out to you about each player as you face them?
Well, let's say this first of all. Steph will get there. I mean, it's when, you know, I mean, we know it's not
sure.
If. And he'll get there sooner than, quicker than I think we think he will because of, you know, he's going to have to take a few more shots this year, maybe not next year. So I think in mid-season next year, he'll get there. But, you know, they're three different guys. They're all great shooters. But, let's talk about Steph first. He's a guy, you know, can shoot from anywhere in the arena with unbelievable ball skills. Not the greatest athlete. He's not super. I mean, I always ask him, I said, when are you going to dunk one? Impress me with that. You know, you've wowed us with your three-point shooting. Go dunk one. And then you talk about Reggie Miller. Reggie Miller was a guy who will run you off 1,000 screens. And then catch and shoot three. And it was just, he was so tough to guard. He's so crafty. He was smart. And he just knew how to play the game and piss you off at the same time. Then there's Ray. Ray is that athletic three-point shooter. So he's an athlete. And, you know, you say close out the three-point shooters. Well, you have to be careful when you run Ray Allen off the three-point line because he was the athlete that can and will dunk on you at the same time. So. But at the end of the game, they all had one thing in common. They were clutch three-point shooters. They all hit unbelievable, clutch, timely threes in championship situations, in major games. You know, we know what Reggie did at the Garden. We know what Ray did in Miami, for Miami, so against San Antonio. Of course, Steph has done it countless years. So it's just those guys are the echelon of three-point shooting, and for Steph to be so close to eclipsing that. And you mentioned one thing I want to say. What Steph got past Reggie in what half the games played, but you know the game has changed. So that number is wowing to some people. It's not for me, obviously, for a lot of us because the game is changing.
Yeah.
Now guys are shooting 11 to 15 threes a game as an individual, not a team, an individual now. So the game's different.
Brian, what do you see as the biggest differences between the three guys?
This is a counting stat. So because the counting is a little different from era to era, you know, say who ends up with the most. I don't know if that's the fairest way to judge the three of them. What I will tell you is this, is that all of them have incredible work ethics. All of them have shown to be able to beat any defense that was thrown at them. And to me, that's the greatest compliment that you could have. And with all the downsides of the Zoom press conferences and the loss of personal connection, this is one rare moment where it was kind of cool where Reggie Miller could come in and surprise, and that probably wouldn't have been available in this venue in this without this time, and to bring his son wearing a Curry jersey. I thought that was really cool more than anything.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. And
hey guys, I want to say one thing.
Vince.
I want to say one thing. The crazy thing about all of this, and like you said, Brian, but as far as the way the game is played now, Steph is going to be up there, and there's going to be guys we may even see in the next 5 years or less, Ray and Reggie further down the list because of the three-point shooters. I mean, think about it. James Harden is probably 200 threes made behind him. Now, I think because James being in Brooklyn, he'll tail off as far as attempts and makes. But the way the game is changing, you're going to see a lot of guys, if they stay healthy and have a long career like these guys are having, will creep up that line, creep up that list.
Yeah, well, I can tell you, by the way, Reggie Miller was one of the main people I worked with when I worked at TNT. And he would come, when we would go do games together, he would come out on the court sometimes if there was basketball around and just start shooting those, firing off those threes. And he is exactly, at this age, exactly as deadly as he was 10 or 15 15 years earlier. And the thing I learned watching him, watching Steph, and of course, especially watching Ray Allen, is that that kind of perfection, that kind of dazzling sort of fireworks that those guys can let off is only the result of boring repetition. So it's such an amazing thing that this incredible, spectacular shot, one of the most exciting things that someone can do on a basketball court, those incredible moonshots that Steph hits, it's the result of something very boring. They work so hard, repeating and repeating and repeating the same mechanics, and it's what makes them great. Really, really special to watch.
Yep.
All right, guys, coming up, we'll talk a little Washington Wizards. They lost by 20 in their return to the court after six straight postponements due to COVID protocols. Do you even expect the Wizards to play 72 games this season? They're supposed to, but how backloaded a schedule would that be, and how would that impact them? We will discuss that next. First, though, here's what The Jump recommends for today. Ramona Shelburne wrote about the brotherhood between Pau Gasol and Kobe Bryant. Gasol tells Ramona about Kobe, quote, "He's the closest thing to a big brother that I've had in my life." Check the story out during the break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. The Wizards playing their first game since January 11th on Sunday. Washington lost 121-101 to San Antonio. The Wizards had their previous six games, remember, postponed because they didn't have enough eligible players due to the league's COVID protocols. They've only played a total of 12 games all season, which is, of course, last in the league. So, Brian, how realistic do you think it really is to assume the Wizards will play a 72-game schedule?
So let's just talk some realities of the calendar. Mm-hmm. So the NBA has not announced the second half season schedule. So in theory, they could extend things and squeeze this in because you've got Memphis, who's also got a bunch of games backlogged, and hopefully not, but there could be some more teams. But the problem is that the NBA wants to finish its finals before the Olympics, which begin July 23rd to 24th. Now, I don't know what's gonna happen with the Olympics either, Rachel. I wish I could tell you, but the NBA does not want to go head to head in the finals with Simone Biles. Okay, or you know, Ledecky. So Katie Ledecky. So I think it's unlikely that they get to play the full 72 games. What's the NBA going to do about that? Stand by and watch. You know, baseball didn't have an equal number of games. It's potentially a rotten situation. Nobody likes it, but that's the reality.
I agree. I don't see that happening. I don't think they'll make 72 games either. We saw college football go through stuff like that. So I just think they'll try to get as many games as possible and figure it out. You look back now when the schedule, half of the schedule came out originally, it's genius, and it kind of gives the NBA some wiggle room to figure out how they can get as many games as possible, move the schedule around. So I thought aspect of it, that was smart to do because, you know, you don't have a bubble, so things like this is going to happen. You just hope it doesn't continue to miss more games. They're already at six. As you start to get to double digits, that's going to be virtually impossible to make up 10 games, so it won't happen.
And look, I've heard players, fans, a lot of people say, man, this isn't fair, what's going on, the competitive balance is off. Yes, you are correct. This will be a season where not every team will get the same fair shot. That is something that everybody accepted when they decided to go forward and have a season outside the bubble, and they decided that it was worth it because of the money that they would make and the fact that this business would be sustained through to the fact that we finally, hopefully, get to come out on the other side of this tunnel. And they decided that they didn't want to go back to a bubble. So if you decide those two things, you are going to have unfair situations for some teams, and that is the Washington Wizards right now. And Vince, Scott Brooks said, I think all of our guys are going to have to get back into NBA rhythm, making the point that it's not just getting another game in, that it's getting back into that rhythm. He said it's been totally taken away from us. What can you tell us about how difficult it is to regain your rhythm after a two-week layoff in the middle of the season?
Yeah, absolutely. Like when you miss one or two, let's say two or three games, sometimes one or two games, you get off rhythm and you're just trying to catch your breath, and you feel like sometimes you've missed a month of basketball. So imagine missing six games in a row. Yeah, practice, you can simulate the NBA, NBA game all you want, but the competition, the level of play that you have to play at every time, because in practice you can play a quarter and then you're going to stop. You're going to stop to make a point in practice, but you can't simulate an NBA game. You can't simulate playing against a LeBron James, a Kevin Durant, Harden, so on and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, it's just going to take time. And, you know, I hope, Wizards fans and out there didn't expect them to come back hitting the ground running, talking about, oh, they have all this rest. Yes, right. They did. They had a lot of rest, but at the same time, the rhythm also comes with that, and you can't get that back. You just have to continue to play games. So hopefully they can play games to get back where they want to be.
And look, we see this with individual players, right? A guy misses a couple weeks because of an injury. It takes him a minute to get his rhythm back, but now it's the whole team. So obviously that is a whole different
situation. Yeah, you can run all you want. You can ride, you can run all you want, ride the bike all you want, get on the treadmill, do all of that. It's nothing that can get you back into game shape but playing.
Absolutely. All right. I want to switch gears because did anyone notice a trend happening this weekend? The big man is back. Well, at least according to our friend Kendrick Perkins. Perk's having fun tweeting right now. Big men still exist. Gosh dang it. Embiid, 33 and 14 boards. Cousins, 28 and 17 boards. Bam, 41 and 9 dimes. AD, 37 and 28 minutes. Jokic, 29 points, 22 boards, 6 dimes. And it wouldn't be a Perk tweet without Carry On. Vince, you witnessed the evolution from bully ball to small ball in the latter part of your career. But what do you think? Do you agree with Perk about the resurgence of the big man right now?
Hey, we also have to, we can't forget about Clint Capella, who had the triple-double with 10 blocks as well. I mean, that's a fair tweet, and he's right. The bigs right now are playing unbelievable basketball, whether it's bully ball, defense, triple-doubles, passes. I mean, they're playing through Jokic. They're 10 blocks in a game. You don't see that often. You're seeing 25 rebounds. You're seeing bigs, like you say, Adebayo putting up 40 points, shooting threes. I mean, the big is back. The big is back, and they've adapted to the new style of play. So kudos to the big man.
Yeah, if we took an MVP straw poll right now, two of the guys would be on near the top of the list would be Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic. We're talking about classic, true five-men players. And the last time a full-on center won MVP was Shaq back in 2000. Duncan and Dirk won it, but they were, played power forward, Duncan especially. So the fact that even the centers are in the MVP discussion, and I'm not saying they would win it. LeBron is building a beautiful case with the Lakers, LeBron yet again. But the fact that that's happening is showing you that the teams are figuring out how to use their talented big men and their three-point shooters, how to use them together. It's a process, to use something that Joel Embiid would like to say, and that process is leading to Embiid to putting up. He had a big-time weekend, too, in two wins over the Celtics, so he's right up there as well.
Well, during this show, the NBA just announced its Eastern and Western Conference Players of the Week, Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic. So there you go. All right, guys, coming up. Gordon Hayward dropping 39, hit the go-ahead bucket to beat the Magic last night. Is the Hornets' big gamble from this past offseason, that $120 million gamble, starting to pay off? We will discuss. Stick with us.
Welcome to the Kobe Show. Take two.
Tomorrow, The Jump celebrates the life of Kobe Bryant with special guests.
The world lost a great basketball player, but LA lost a superhero.
Special memories.
The look he gave me was so damn disrespectful, it was crazy.
And of course, so many incredible Kobe moments.
81-point game!
The Jump honors Kobe Bryant tomorrow, 2 to 4 Eastern, right here on ESPN.
Wow, yamo tu. Ciao.
Very special day tomorrow again, honoring Vanessa Bryant's wishes and celebrating Kobe's life. It is crunch time here on The Jump. Giannis called for a free throw violation for taking too long to shoot this weekend. He's shooting a career worst 59% from the line this season. Now, Vince, the free throw violation was, you remember a couple years ago, they sped up the amount of time you had at the line. But overall, how big of a deal are his struggles at the free throw line?
I think it's a big deal, and I think that 10 seconds come from overthinking the situation in the process. So as a free throw shooter, Giannis, he's proven he wants to be the best in the game. So he's trying to put it all together, and I think you could tell sometimes at the free throw line, he's thinking about every process, every situation before he gets to actually shooting it, instead of just shooting it, trusting the process that he's gone through in practice.
Well, after the game, he said the guys on the lanes were counting down to put pressure on the refs. 6, 7,
that was
eight,
Rondo.
That got into his head maybe a little bit. And you, yeah, Rondo, totally. And you think that that's going to stop? No, it's going to keep going. And look, there have been times in his career where he's had 15-game stretches like this where he hasn't shot that well. I'm not worried about this 15-game stretch. But if you go back and look over the 4 years, last four
yeah,
years,
that graph
4 years
showed.
Ago, he was a 77% free throw percentage shooter. And that fall off is worrisome.
That graph is really interesting. Well, go ahead, Vince.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, and as I think you just think every year that it started to go down, I think he's thinking about, okay, I just need to be perfect. I need to get it right. So now every year he's thinking about the year before, where did it go wrong? Where did it go wrong? And I just think he's overthinking it. And sometimes he looks mechanical, guys, because if you look at his free throw on some of the, on those, the video, his head falls back so much, so that's why he's short or goes right sometimes, because when his head falls back, goes back, those shoulders fall back, and he shoots it short a lot. And I think he's thinking about it. It's like once he gets up to this point, he's thinking, where do I need to get the ball up, not out, or get the ball up, not out. All of these different things, I think, is playing in his mind when he's shooting. And that's if he gets that out of his mind, you'll see his free throw percentage take off again.
The mind messes with the mechanics, but then the worse the mechanics get,
absolutely,
the worse it messes with your mind. So this is a problem. We've seen other players go through this. Some are able to dig themselves out of it. Some, frankly, never get it back. So we will have to see what goes on with Giannis, and you can see it affecting his shot in other ways when he's not on the free throw line. And again, we have seen that with player after player over time as well. So we will keep watching it. I want to switch over, guys, to the Miami Heat. They are going to use coronavirus sniffing dogs. You heard me say that right. I'll just say it again. Coronavirus sniffing dogs at their arena to screen fans who want to attend their games. They've been working on this plan for months. Highly trained dogs have been in place for some games already this season, in which the team has allowed just a handful of guests, mostly friends and family of players and staff. They are in Florida. That is it within the rules. But Brian, what have you heard about how this works?
Well, now this is a rapid test, Rachel. That is a rapid test. And I have to say, having attended hundreds right. of games in Miami over the years, they have dogs sniffing for all kinds of things in that arena, and they have kept everybody safe.
Right.
And I will say again that in Miami, there's dogs sniffing for stuff all over the city, all day long. There's a bunch of good boys identifying a lot of stuff. So if they say they can do it, the people in Miami know how to train sniffing dogs. Whatever keeps you safe, let's try it.
Wow. That was a lot, Brian.
I just have one question, guys. I just got one question to that. I know, Brian, that's a little much, but I got a question. What happens if this dog says, oh, this person has the virus, and then they take the rapid test and they don't have the virus?
You have one question?
What
I have like 100
then?
Questions about this.
Right. I mean, that's where the one question starts.
That's true.
Two more questions.
So then it gets to two more.
To a follow-up.
Three more. I know. Hopefully we will get a little bit more of an explanation here. Hey, if they can figure out how to do this, they've got something that I think schools, hospitals, a lot of other people would like to know how that technology works.
For sure.
I still have many.
Absolutely.
Many questions. All right, let's talk about the Grizzlies, guys, because their game against the Bulls on Wednesday has been postponed. It's the fifth straight game they've had to miss due to, yep, say it with me, COVID protocols. So, Vince, remember COVID. They were on a 5-game win streak before this happened. Really
yes.
weathered injuries, right, to John Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr. But now mm-hmm. we're getting to the same situation we talked about with the Wizards. They haven't played in a full week. We were saying how hard it is to stay locked in. What advice would you give them? What can they do?
You can't do anything. It's pretty much they're in the same boat that the Wizards were in. You just have to hope you can simulate in practice as much as possible just to keep them in some type of rhythm until you actually get out there and play again.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that have conspired to keep the Grizzlies out of the playoffs the last couple of years. The karma's going to come back around, Grizzly fans. I promise it'll work out in the long run. The karma will change.
All right, let's get to our league best game of the night. We got a lot of games for our producers to choose from, but they're going to go with Hornets Magic at 7 Eastern. This game is going to mark the first time in league history two female officials will work the same NBA game. So claps for progress there. Officials nice. Natalie Sago nice. And Jenna Schroeder working with Sean Wright tonight. As for the game itself, let's talk about a marquee free agent making a difference with his new team. Gordon Hayward hit a go-ahead shot late last night, is leading Charlotte and scoring at 24 points per game. Now, Brian, there was a lot of talk about the four-year, $120 million contract he got from Charlotte. My point at the time was you can't say it in a vacuum, right? What else was open to Charlotte spending that money on? So I liked the bet they took on him. Do you think it started to pay off?
Well, look, neither one of these were their first options. Gordon Hayward was trying to get signed and traded to Indiana. He was looking at other options. For weeks, he was looking at options. And Charlotte was sort of the last team at the table with the money, and so he went with them. And Charlotte wasn't even sure they wanted to do it. They thought about it for a long time and ended up having to cut a player. But I will say this. Gordon Hayward is a central part of a team again. He's headed for the All-Star team again. That's what he wanted. Charlotte wanted a difference-making player. That's what they got. We'll see if it works out long run, short run. They've got to be happy.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that would work. Like you said, Brian, I knew he wanted to go to Indiana, but I tell you what, he's playing with a lot of confidence. They had the number three pick, so getting Ball, bringing him to that team. You know, Ball puts him in a position where he can succeed. He's giving that franchise a lot of confidence right now, so good for him.
Thank you, Vince Carter. The Jump will be back with a two-hour edition tomorrow. We'll see you then.